Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gremling.
I'm Jenny Renta.
I'm Connor Orr.
And guys, we are 3 days away from the official start of the NFL season. That is if you're listening on Monday, which really you should be. But it's time for our previews and our predictions. And I don't know. This is the time of year. No, this is the time of year where if you're a baby about pools like I am, like swimming pools, it's that sensation where you don't want to jump in because the water is too cold. And then once you're in, it's kind of like, okay. But yeah, I don't know. This is never a great feeling right now.
Speak for yourself. I know that the Browns are going to win the Super Bowl, so I feel good about it, and I've felt good about it for the last month. And I've been in the pool. I've been in the pool since early June.
Yeah, Connor's feeling like this year is really going to cement his Oracle status. It's going to prove the accuracy once and for all with his biggest pick yet. So for Connor, 2021 is an exciting year.
By the way, Gary is coming off of an episode 2 weeks ago where he said that Michael Badgley was going to be the biggest X factor in the NFL, and but poor Michael Badgley did not survive cutdown weekend, and so, you know.
The season hasn't even started yet, though. Who knows where Michael Badgley ends up? Who knows what position he'll end up playing for his next team? Who knows?
Oh, maybe, that's true.
Yeah, maybe. Also, he'd be perfectly branded for the reboot of the XFL at this point, but yeah.
Sports Illustrated's biggest X factor joins the XFL. It's perfect.
There you go. The headline writes itself for the story that nobody will read. All right. I'm sure I'm going to catch more heat about Michael Badgley as things go on. I will say it was nice in a way to get all the taunts and accusations, because it's just a reminder that the moment he got cut, like, all my mentions filled up on all my social media, and it was just kind of like, oh, you guys do listen to the show. You were paying attention.
Nice reminder.
A true positive reframe.
Absolutely. So this is the way we're going to do it, guys. We are going to start off the top of the show here by running down some of our, I don't want to call them bold picks, because who's to say what bold is in this day and age, but they're kind of against the grain, things that maybe go against the conventional wisdom as far as our individual picks and predictions go. After that, we will have the full on. We're going to give you all of our picks for every playoff team, every major award, and go from there. But we are going to start with against the grain, and we'll let Jenny start this one off.
All right. So only in 2021 would this be considered against the grain, but I have picked the Patriots to win the AFC East. Maybe it is getting caught up in the recent Mac Jones hype and the rookie's strong preseason and him winning the job, or maybe it's the fact that this is the real start of the post-Tom Brady era in New England, or maybe I just think that we're all a little bit too down on the Patriots after one lone down season, and I don't really want to bet against their resurgence this year. So I have picked them to win the division. It'll be an interesting division this year. A lot of young quarterbacks, Tua Tagovailoa in Miami, Josh Allen in Buffalo is suddenly the elder statesman. You know, obviously the Jets have Zach Wilson. So lots could be up in the air this year, but I can just imagine a situation in which Mac Jones was trained for this opportunity by Bill Belichick's best friend in coaching. He knows exactly what to do. And there were a lot of games last season where the Patriots just had to do a little bit more. And that was with a league high number of opt-outs for COVID-19. And, you know, that was with, you know, a lot of positions being patched together. They went on a free agency spending spree. All of these things are uncharacteristic because they had to do things differently in the post-Tom Brady era. The Patriots had to take a different tack. They couldn't do team building the same way they've always done it. So those things don't always work out. Rarely do we see a free agency spending spree work out. And it is hard for a rookie quarterback to come in and immediately make an impact. But I am not going to bet against that happening.
Boy, I'll say one thing, and it happened a while ago, so we don't have to rehash the whole Cam Newton getting cut stuff, but I don't know, I was just so excited to see like a full-on like Cam Newton 11-man running game. it just seemed like that's how they were building it, as I tried to, again, justify my incorrect thoughts from, like, 3 weeks ago. It just seemed like when you sign Kendrick Bourne, you're not signing Kendrick Bourne to be, like, you know, a 100-catch guy like the new Wes Welker or something. Like, you're signing him because he's a little things guy who is going to help you out on perimeter blocking and stuff like that. But it's an interesting fit here with Mac Jones because they're not very good on the outside. And I don't, does that matter ultimately? Nelson Agholor is probably your only starting caliber receiver at this point.
I don't think it matters. The Patriots haven't been good on the outside generally, right? I mean, obviously when they had Randy Moss, but that was a brief period of time. I think they bring in players that fit a specific function in their offense. And I think it's probably true that we don't know exactly what specific function all of these pieces will fit. But they don't ever sign anybody or draft anybody without some plan. Not saying that it works out. Obviously, they have had a lot of draft misses in recent years, and thus they needed to spend in free agency. But I think when they chose Mac Jones as a starting quarterback, they obviously had a plan for an offense that would work around him.
I agree with everybody, surprisingly. I agree with Jenny because Bill Belichick is my coach of the year pick in our MMQB preseason picks. And I also agree with Gary that I do think the intent was to build a Cam Newton offense, but Mac Jones just won the job in the preseason. And, you know, like I think a lot of people tried to make this about Cam Newton perhaps not being vaccinated or, you know, all these other kinds of things. But I really think that if you followed Belichick, and some of the Patriots beat reporters did a good job of noting this too, historically over time, he just handed larger and larger portions of the reps at practice to Mac Jones. And that's what he does with starting quarterbacks. And in his mind, he was winning the job. And I know a lot of people thought that Cam looked better this preseason, but it's hard for me to ignore also how good Mac Jones looked. Like, I think Mac Jones looked better and more prepared to run an NFL offense than any of the rookies that we saw, any of the first-round rookies that we saw. So if he's good enough to beat Cam Newton for the job fair and square, which I think he did, I think, to Jenny's point, he's certainly good enough to beat the Jets twice a year, to beat the Dolphins twice a year, you know, and to help them weather that division and come out in first place.
Boy, this linebacking core. I mean, the guys they ran out there last year in a Belichick defense, it was such a bummer, but now they got Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy back. And even if you think those guys had taken lost a half step, I don't know. That's just really good to see them back on the field. And then Matt Judon is like, he is so Belichicky. I mean, this is like a full-on like Bill Belichick defense again after last year where it was really like spare parts in there trying to make it work.
You know, I was thinking about that because the focus was on, okay, the offseason additions on offense and obviously the quarterback competition, but I was looking at the defense as I was making the picks and it's like, oh yeah, they got Matthew Judon. Like, that's a big deal for the defense. And they got all these players back, whether they were opt-outs last year or Kyle Van Noy's brief hiatus in Miami, whatever the case may be. They look a lot stronger on defense. It looks more like the kinds of units that have brought the Patriots success. And I'm not saying Mac Jones won't have bumps along the way, although I did pick him to be the rookie of the year. But listen, most rookies have bumps along the way, although Justin Herbert was pretty good last year. But, you know, preseason to the regular season is obviously still a big projection. And so I'm probably getting caught up in this recent hype. But it is impressive how Mac Jones went in, won the job, was able to learn to the level that Josh McDaniels and Belichick would be comfortable with putting him in, and his ability to make all the checks and do all of the things necessary. I mean, a lot in that offense where they don't have, you know, let's say they don't have talent on the outside, there are other ways they find to make up with it based on the quarterback's decision making or where you go with the football or certain reads. And so his ability to master that clearly was at a level that McDaniels was comfortable having him be the guy.
I will go next. And I will go. I have the Colts in the AFC title game here, losing to the Chiefs. I will unveil that now because it's the least bold prediction you can make. But I have the Colts in the AFC title game, and I think what happened with Indianapolis was because of the Carson Wentz injury early in training camp, and the Quentin Nelson injury early in training camp. Everyone kind of, anyone who's on the bandwagon stepped off, and anyone thinking about stepping on was kind of like, ah, oh, well, this is all going really poorly at this point. But, I mean, look, we are a week away from the opener. It looks like Wentz is going to be back. There's a good chance Nelson's going to be back. So you're going to have a full roster here for the Colts. Now, if you look at what this team was a year ago, I mean, they were outstanding defensively, and you get another year with all these guys. Matt Eberflus, when he has that sort of what's becoming a veteran defense here, I mean, you can do things. He can expand that defense in ways that not everyone can. He can do different things on the back end that not everyone in the NFL can do with this one. I think this is going to be easily a top five defense, and then it's just a question of, can Frank Reich fix Carson Wentz? And I think the answer is most likely yes. And if you get, again, it doesn't have to be MVP-level Carson Wentz, but if you get, like, 2019 Carson Wentz in there, complemented by this just, it's an all-world offensive line. It might be the best run-blocking line in the NFL. They're going to ride the running game heavily. I just don't really see a weakness with this team unless you think Wentz is going to implode. And I don't think he is. I don't think he's MVP this year, but I think he's going to be as good as he was in 2019. And I think that's good enough for them to basically be the kings of the second tier in the AFC.
It's an interesting take. I mean, we have to kind of, at some point, reset the Gary meter here because there's a lot of your loving of things and disliking of things. It's a very fluid situation. I'm learning as we get closer to camp. But I still can't see, like, it's funny how all the things that were sort of quickly shoved out the door in Philadelphia, like, that's not true about Carson Wentz, that's not true about Carson Wentz, are slowly starting to, like, percolate again in Indianapolis. Like, he's not a great leader. He's kind of waffling about this vaccination thing. And, you know, I'm not saying that Indianapolis media is not hard-hitting. I'm just saying that, like, normally when you leave Philadelphia and go to a sort of a cozy Midwestern outpost, you're not that backed up. You don't have your back against the wall as the team's starting quarterback, but it feels like he's starting the season that way. It's all just a very odd sort of vibe right now, and I think that the Colts go from Philip Rivers, who is sort of this consummate professional leader, to basically handing the thing off to Carson Wentz, which I think is going to take some time for these guys to digest.
Yeah, and there's my reservations with the Colts also relate to there's some clear internal frustration over the vaccination level of the players. The percentage is not where Chris Ballard wants it to be. Obviously, your starting quarterback has been open that he's not vaccinated, which can lead to missed time, but can also lead to locker room frustration. So if your starting quarterback is out because he was a close contact, like the time that Wentz recently missed, which is in the preseason and not a big deal, but that has the ability to happen more frequently when you're not vaccinated, given the current protocols in the league. And so I can see all of those things kind of being sources of frustration, locker room friction, et cetera. It's hard to imagine the Colts in my mind, but evidently, Gary, you have put them in the AFC title game. So I am interested to see what happens this season. But it's hard for me to imagine those things wouldn't affect the team's performance in some way.
I just want to point out, I would not have put them in the AFC title game if they were not going there, obviously. So I will say, and look, I hope this is the case. This is my gut feeling on how this will play out is I wouldn't be shocked if a Carson Wentz or a Lamar Jackson or a Kirk Cousins misses a game at some point this year, but I don't think it's going to be as big a deal unless it's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, well, here's a huge, like, you know, do or die week 18 game and now your quarterback is unavailable. I think that's when it becomes a huge issue, but I don't think it's going to be as big an issue unless it's like the absolute worst moment where it comes up and then it happens. I mean, I'm more worried about Carson Wentz and his tendency last season to, I don't know, kind of run around in circles and then sort of throw chest passes into the air to get intercepted. But I think that will correct itself. And yeah, I mean, the vaccination situation, it's not good with him. I'm not sure what the pros and cons he's weighing right now are, but I don't think it's a sort of meltdown type of issue once we get underway here.
So the headline I'm getting from there is Grambling Colon not taking COVID seriously.
It's
don't fear the virus, fear Carson Wentz.
No, I'm not touching that.
Do you want me to bail you out with my Colts bold prediction?
Yeah, I would love a bolder prediction about the Colts than that.
So for just to back up for readers, so every year during the MMQB preview, we are asked to obviously pick the playoff teams and all the award winners. And we're also asked to make a bold prediction. Some people like to go bolder than others. But I think, you know, if you're not making a bold prediction, then, you know, then it should just be called like, you know, somewhat interesting predictions. Yeah. You know, so mine happened to involve the Indianapolis Colts, and I'm just going to read what I filed to editor Mitch, who has the tall task of making this into a legible thing. So the Indianapolis Colts put together the wildest winning and losing streaks in NFL history. Frank Reich bolsters his credentials as a masterful coach by steering Indianapolis out of the doldrums following an intense, bad luck-laden losing streak of 5 games and steadying the Colts for a playoff run. Indianapolis' season is almost comically ping-ponged between unseen weather situations, injuries, doinked field goals, bounce passes, and other did-this-stadium-get-built-on-a-cursed-ground kind of happenings, including one very high-profile instance of food poisoning at a non-coastal restaurant where the idea of ordering seafood might seem iffy. Regardless, they emerge stronger and more dangerous than ever before. Michael Pittman Jr. reaches 1,000 yards, and the seafood poisoning at the non-coastal city becomes a rallying cry later in the year. Fans bring empty shrimp casings and clamshells to games and tape them to wooden signs. It bolsters their belief in the Midwest and in beef. After first downs, they chant, "Beef, beef, beef. We are Indiana. We are beef." And it makes the whole community feel alive again, and families dine together at the table with their cell phones rotting in distant garbage cans, never to return. They begin practicing mindfulness meditation at schools, and we all start to inch back towards the middle again, together. The Colts clinch the playoffs on a 76-yard punt return during the season finale.
Wow. I love how that was part Mad Libs, too, is how it felt.
Wow. I, for one, would not associate eating beef with meditation and mindfulness. They generally don't seem to be in the same category, but I'm glad that Indianapolis has found its rallying cry. I'm also a little bit concerned for the reputation of a very prominent downtown Indianapolis seafood restaurant that I've eaten at and is actually pretty delicious.
True.
But, you know,
it wasn't
maybe,
that one.
It wasn't that one. Connor made sure not to name the restaurant.
Or the player. I don't want to wish a violent food poisoning on anybody,
yeah.
But, you know, it will happen. So sorry to whoever that is.
Sorry to everyone on the 53. All right.
Connor, so there you go.
Connor, now you have to follow that up.
Okay. All right. So back on... all right. Let's go back to Earth here. So my other sort of against the grain prediction here that we've talked a lot about on the show so far is that I think the Browns are going to the Super Bowl. And one of my favorite things to do... I've just been talking about this pick nonstop. I made it on a Norwegian podcast, so it's obviously global as well as, well, double global since we're global, but the other podcast is global. I enjoy, like, you know, sometimes from time to time, we all do various radio interviews and people ask you for your thoughts on the season. And I always start by saying that the Browns are going to the Super Bowl. And what I like to do is I like to hang on and continue to listen after they hang up on me. And today I did one in Denver, and the guy was just like, "Wow, Connor's really passionate about the Browns going to the Super Bowl." And someone was just like, "Yeah, I guess it's a good thing that that he believes that, you know, and then they just like moved on to the next segment. But I just, good for him. Yeah, it was just like, yeah, good for you with your you know, it's like, good for you, guy who believes aliens are going to land in his backyard. But I just can't shake it. I mean, I think it's a complete team, and I think they can beat you so many different ways. I think there's components of this offense that we haven't seen yet, and the defense is solid. I mean, they got the best defensive player in free agency. Their second-round pick at safety last year and missed the whole season is back. The corners look good. Defensive interior is probably your one weakness, but I don't know. I don't see a ton of weaknesses on this team.
Well, because I like to comfortably stay in the middle ground here, Connor, as we discussed last week and on several episodes, I picked the Browns to win the division and make the playoffs, but not win the Super Bowl. So I'm like partially on board. I think with the contract situation for Baker Mayfield still unresolved, that can be a motivating factor, especially for someone with this kind of mentality that was a reason why the Browns drafted Mayfield in the first place, right? Like coming into a place and kind of, you know, saying like proving people wrong and, you know, doing something that people think can't be done, et cetera, et cetera. So, and also, I don't know if you noticed, but there's another season of the Progressive commercials. And while I've stated that I'm a little bit lukewarm on them, I know that Connor is a big fan. So I just wondered if that has factored into your pick at all as well.
Baker Mayfield is funny in those commercials. And you guys know me. I hate everything. And I like those commercials.
Very surprising.
I think the bit is funny. You know, the whole I'm a homeowner thing and I locked my keys in the car but I live in a stadium thing is just hilarious to me. I really enjoy it, and I think he sells it well.
No, I wrote it last January. He's excellent in those commercials. They are really good commercials. I also like the Flo commercials. I guess I just really like Progressive commercials. But Baker Mayfield's like performance is really good. Like you get Mark Ruffalo for those commercials, and it's like a lateral move at that point. Like Baker's just as good.
Totally agree. I mean, I would put Baker Mayfield and Peyton Manning in front of a group of experts from Juilliard, and they would laugh Peyton Manning out of the building. Baker Mayfield gets into Juilliard.
Yeah.
We're really doubling down on Brown's bold predictions here. Now the starting quarterback is going to Juilliard.
Yeah,
Gary, your turn.
I want to throw some cold water on this.
Okay.
And I said this the other day when I was conversing with someone. I like the Browns players. And I like the Browns coaches, but I don't think the Browns are going to the playoffs. This is what I don't like about that. I don't like the amount of changeover on defense. I don't like change anyway. I'm a frightened old man, but I don't like the thought of trying to mesh all these new pieces in this first season here. I think this is a team that pops in 2022, but I think maybe they take a step back in 2021. And I don't like the linebackers. And after reading Connor Orr's wonderful piece on the Bucs linebackers and the growing trend of the importance of linebackers, maybe Mac Wilson takes off. Maybe he's the guy. I don't know that. Mac Wilson, Anthony Walker, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa trio. I'm not buying it. I don't think the defense is going to be good enough, and I think the offense is, while better than it was like mid-season last year, I think they're not good enough to sort of carry them the way that they have to be carried.
I'm very excited for this to just play this on a loop during the first week of February. All of Gary's negativity.
Just play the first part when I say I like their players and their coaches.
Tony Fields, the second, their fifth round pick at linebacker, is back and practicing this week. The team was privately very excited that he dropped to them that low, and they sort of envisioned him in that sort of thumper role along with JOK. And I don't know. I think there's a lot to like there.
The great thing about this segment is that one of us is going to be right. Either the Browns have a disappointing season and Gary's right, we can play his clip, or they make the playoffs but don't go all the way and I'm right, or Connor hits the home run and, you know, we can just crown him champion, world's best oracle, something like that.
How, we've covered the Browns takes.
How tenable would this podcast be if the Browns made the Super Bowl? Like,
yeah,
it would be awful.
Yeah.
And there, no amount of personal coaching could get me to not be a complete wiener that whole week, you know? And that's just going to be a real bummer for everybody.
What if Michael Badgley somehow ended up on the Browns roster that week?
Kick them to the Super Bowl?
I mean,
everything would just melt down.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right. So now we have some optimistic picks. And I think this side of the ledger for our bold predictions is less optimistic. So one of my bold-ish, less optimistic predictions is that the Steelers will not make the playoffs. They have what I think has been analyzed as the league's most difficult schedule, as Gary pointed out, because they were first in the division last year. They play the first place schedule. Although I did have somebody on Twitter that had routinely come after me to say that if you work it out, that there's not really that much of a difference. Like, he was very passionate about the fact that this is a talking point without much meat behind it. But in this case, I think it's pretty true because you're playing the Chiefs, you're playing the Bills, and you're playing the Titans, right? So I think they're, and then they also have the NFC North. They're playing the Packers in week 4. Just have a lot of tough opponents on the schedule. And I'm also just not sold that we're going to get a version of Ben that is good enough to get the Steelers back to where they were when he was a better version of himself as a player. Was that a sentence that made any sense?
It does, but I was blinded by rage as I gear up to defend the honor of Ben Roethlisberger. First of all, you know how slimmed down he is. I mean, if he played at like 235, if he played at 235 last year, he's at like 233 and a half right now. So that's a great sign going in. I do want to address I've said my piece on the Steelers and their coming success and coming division championship this season, but I do just want to touch on the deep ball throwing thing, because I think that's something of a, I'm going to call it a red herring, possibly not very accurately, but I'm going to call it a red herring of a stat here, because it's such a small sample size. And I'm not arguing that Ben's arm strength is actually what it was 10 years ago. It's definitely worse, but it's just, it's a small sample size stat, no matter who you're talking about. And it is fairly volatile with some guys. I think outside of like Russell Wilson, I think you could find some guys who have had some really down years. And if you remember last year, going into the Bucs late season bye week, this same thing sort of came up with Tom Brady. And Tom Brady had at one point missed 19 straight passes, traveling 20 plus yards. But if you look over his career, he had seasons where he was like, you know, around 30% on those things. And it's a narrative that sort of got, just blown out of proportion a little bit. I don't think Ben's downfield passing is that much of an issue. I think the bigger issue is the fact that they just didn't do it as much last year. But I don't really see why he chose to came back if he's just going to go out there and throw nothing but quick strike like they did a year ago, which seemed to be just to keep him healthy. So I think you see an expanded Steelers offense here, especially in the passing game. And I think we know what their defense is. And I see definitely like a three-way game between the Chiefs, Colts, and Steelers in the AFC championship on a triangular field.
Do you think they have the offensive line, though, to expand the offense in the way that you're discussing?
That's where it gets a little bit tricky, but I think they're good enough up front. I don't think Alejandro Villanueva was very good last year, and I think that's why he sort of had trouble latching on this season. I don't think there's enough downgrades. I think David DeCastro, I was a little bit surprised they moved on from DeCastro at this point. I think maybe he has a year left, but I think they're going to be good enough up front to get this working, and that's all you ask for an offensive line is just be good enough.
I'm going to do a famous Gary Hedge here and say that I'm very excited for Matt Canada as a play caller, yeah, who I'm a big fan of, but I think the Steelers are going to be bad. So
nice.
That would be, yeah. How was that? That was good?
I think that was really good. And I do think the Canada edition is interesting and exciting. I mean, I remember when we did a story about the Chiefs basically redesigning their offense even before they had Patrick Mahomes. I remember Andy Reid talking about, you know, seeing some of Matt Canada's plays. He was at Maryland at the time and all the backfield motion. So he's definitely an interesting addition, an interesting presence. I don't know. I think could inject the offense with some of the things that Gary's talking about. But yeah, I don't have enough confidence in the line. They have a really tough schedule and, you know, still need to sign TJ Watt to a contract extension.
You know what the weird thing is about Ben Roethlisberger? And I don't know if I don't think this gets rectified like ever, but I used to think the same thing about Aaron Rodgers is he just doesn't, they don't do play action. He doesn't like doing play action and they just don't do it. And I think they're like the one offense in football left that's just like, we don't do play action.
Well, you know, related to that, Gary, I remember last year when I was doing a TJ Watt story and I talked to Keith Butler, the defensive coordinator, he mentioned that he was seeing the offense in practice starting to do some different kinds of motions, different kinds of things they hadn't previously incorporated into their offense, and thus the defense hadn't had a chance to practice against as much of. And last year, obviously, Canada was there as the quarterback's coach. So when I said addition before, I meant promotion and, you know, the ability to call the plays. But I think it will be interesting to see them sort of expand and take it to another level and incorporate more of those things that we traditionally haven't seen that much of in the Steelers offense.
You can still teach poor Ben some new things. I think they'll be all right. It is my turn to dump on someone. I'm picking the Seahawks here. And I feel like I pick the Seahawks every year. You know, it'll be the year that they go 8-8, although this year it would be 9-8 or 8-9. But I think this is the year that they sort of slide back a little too much. The one reason you'd be bullish here is, you know, is Shane Waldron the guy who unlocks Russell Wilson in full at this point? I mean, it's, we've seen Russell, he's been great, but it's been a somewhat, I don't want to say limited is the word, because it's still been a really like high performing offense, but it's been the sort of run heavy, play action heavy type of thing that that they've succeeded in. They sprinkled in that one season, Daryl Bevel went with like a spread quick strike offense that was really, really good. And I wish they'd sort of put in some of those elements again at some point and see how it goes. But if Russell Wilson ends up being MVP this year and sort of putting this team on his back in a way that, I don't know, I mean, he hasn't, but like, most quarterbacks don't in this day and age. Like, you need a little bit of help, and I don't know if Waldron ends up being that guy to sort of boost Wilson to the next echelon, but I just think this defense is going to be really bad. And I realize that if they did, as they did, sign Jamal Adams to that contract extension, they probably do have a plan. I'm not saying this is going to be the same Legion of Boom, you know, single high safety scheme that they ran forever, but, you know, they don't have a four-man pass rush. Their numbers were bad when they blitzed Jamal Adams. You probably have to blitz Jamal Adams a ton because he just, teams picked on him in coverage. You already have two linebackers you want on the field at all times, so it's almost like you're playing three linebackers at all time. But mostly, Jamal Adams blitzing doesn't work that great because they're just not very good on the back end. And anyone who's listened to the show for years knows I've always thought Akilah Weatherspoon could be a really good player in the right system, and I was kind of like excited to see him in Seattle, and they traded him. So he's with the Steelers now. Another reason the Steelers are probably going to that AFC Championship game. But I think this defense is going to be hugely problematic. It was problematic last year, but I think it's going to be another level of problematic this year, and I just don't think the Seahawks have it.
That was a thorough undressing of the Seahawks, Gary.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Seattle. But the good news is I'm wrong every year about the Seahawks, so they'll probably go 13-4 and win the NFC.
But you just keep predicting it because you figure at some point it's going to happen.
At some point, it's going to happen. At some point, Russell Wilson will retire, and in 2042, the Seahawks will go 7-10, or however many games are. They'll go 8-14. And that'll be my victory lap.
I'm very excited for you when that moment happens, Gary. I currently have them at 12-5 and coming in second place in the division.
I have them in second place as well.
Who do you guys have them ahead of? 49ers?
And the Rams winning the division.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Rams, Seahawks, 49ers.
Hmm. Seems...
Cardinals.
Yeah. Seems disrespectful of the 49ers, but okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this also seems like a little bit of a shot at my X Factor from a couple weeks back, and guess who?
I was just going to say, Jordan Brooks. I mean, who's still on the roster, by the way, unlike Gary's, so... You know,
seems like a little bit of a shot, I'm not going to lie, but yeah, Connor and I see things a little differently, but I do appreciate how thorough your decision-making was there. Basically, when I was like, Steelers might not make the playoffs, I was like, yeah, you know, tough schedule, Ben's old, blah, blah, blah. But like Gary was really breaking down every aspect of their roster. So I really respect that. If you're going to make a pick, you have the reasoning to stand behind it, Gary.
It worries me. It worries me there.
Gary, very worried about the Seahawks.
Pete Carroll, call me. I'm worried about your team.
Well, this is the NFC West segment of our show, apparently, because I think Connor has another NFC West take teed up.
Yeah, I was just quickly. I was closing my online menu. I'm also working out my inspiration roll order. But I have to get the Cardinals schedule up to make my point here.
Okay, well, can we just as a brief hiatus describe? I had never heard of inspiration roll, and last week you were like, "Yeah, tonight we're doing inspiration roll," and I thought there was like some new kitchen gadget where you like didn't know what you were gonna make and you had like two dice and you rolled one and you got chicken and you rolled the other one and you got tacos or maybe you get like fish and
that'd be awesome
and right but like awesome. It's a pretty good invention, right? So like I felt yes. The need to say it on the show because I feel like somebody should do it and you know we should get some credit for it.
Just a very small residual thing, like we won't hire a gigantic law firm and come after you and just take everything you own if you do it, as long as you give us credit for it. That's all we're
looking for. Yeah, maybe we would just take like dinner at Inspiration Roll as a payment of sorts, you know, a little thank you for the idea.
I would want the money, but also it's Jenny's idea, so who
it's
am
my
I to
idea,
say?
Yeah.
I feel like also, just as one more aside, Jenny came up with the true idea of Inspiration Roll a long time ago, and back when we used to, you know, do things like dine together in person and see each other at lunch. We had a great cafeteria, and Jenny would get just like a styrofoam container and just add in so many different fascinating items that one would not think would belong together on a plate. And then lo and behold, we sit down and it was like every week it was like an unveiling of something that I was very interested in. And it always looked delicious despite the varied origins of all these ingredients. And so that's basically what Inspiration Roll is like, we're going to have some rice and then you just throw whatever else you want on top of it. And so
it's perfect.
It's great. Yeah. Love Inspiration Roll. So Inspiration Roll, get at us. Progressive. You know, we're ready to sell out. This is not a joke.
And Bigelow. Don't forget
Bigelow tea. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So everybody get at us. So my negative here is the Arizona Cardinals. And with the 49ers taking, I think, such a mammoth leap this offseason, and with Trey Lance is going to be as good as he is, I think, and them getting the roster back healthy, it just doesn't leave room for another good team in that division, or really even another mediocre team in that division. I think they're going to fall off. And when I said this, one of the replies on Twitter was, well, no way, we signed J.J. Watt and A.J. Green this offseason. And it's like, yeah, your two biggest signings were two guys in their mid-30s whose best football is way behind them. Like, no offense, and I know maybe this will get to J.J. Watt and he'll start doing workouts like crazy and I was right and you were wrong and whatever, and I get it, that's fine, but I think the Cardinals are going to be bad. And you know, I'm just going down the schedule. So week one they go at Tennessee. They don't really have a run defense and they're facing Derrick Henry, the freshest that he's going to be all season. I don't think that's a win. The Vikings, you toss that game up. The Jaguars, who Gary have winning the Super Bowl this year, then week three, and then you get into the real meat of the schedule, which is the Rams, the 49ers, and the Browns. You could come out of there 1-5. you know, pretty easily right now. Like, I don't see them maybe 2-4, but I don't see them being any better than that. Maybe you beat the Vikings and you beat the Jaguars. That's about it.
I don't see any great answers on offense here. I think that's the issue. Or I shouldn't say it that way. They have a lot of talent on offense. They just haven't. It just hasn't been a very forward-thinking offense that they've run the last couple years here that we all thought it would be. And, you know, whatever, maybe Rondale Moore adds that wrinkle-type element here, but they were really good in the first half of last season because Kyler Murray was making just incredible individual out-of-structure plays. And when that dried up, and by the way, you know, Murray also got banged up, which is, you know, a possible consequence of having to rely on him in that way. It's just, I don't know. I don't know what they do this year. This is another team. The Seahawks have to find another solution on defense, and I think the Cardinals have to find another solution on offense here. That's another team that I will wake my wife up at 3 a.m. and just be like, God, I'm really worried about the Cardinals. What do they do?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say we're all in agreement here, but I don't feel quite that strongly about this. But especially in that division, right? I mean, you have the Rams going and getting Matthew Stafford. You have the 49ers ready to enter the Trey Lance era at any point. And I agree with you. I think the Cardinals need to sort of figure out a solution that looks better than it did last year, which is basically asking your quarterback to make a lot of things happen. And to Connor's point, it's almost like the person who like drafts their fantasy football league based off of like who was good a few years ago, right? Like you think of like the big names and you just kind of draft them and you're like, oh, but wait, like we should be projecting future performance rather than building our roster based on past performance.
Alfred Morris is here in round 6? No way. All right, guys, in 1 second, we are unveiling all of our official etched in stone picks. So here it is. We've given you sort of the, again, they weren't bold predictions. They were against the grain predictions in the first half of the show. And now we're going to give you all our predictions. We are going to run through every playoff team. We are going to give you our Super Bowl matchup and champion. And we are going to give you every individual award here. But we are, we'll do it this way. We will start with Jenny each time. And then we will go to Connor, and then we'll go to me, because I think that's how I have it listed. But we are starting with our AFC wildcard picks. All three wildcard picks. Jenny Vrentis, go.
All right. So wait, we're not doing wildcard round games. You just want my
Correct.
Three wildcard
teams.
Just
wildcard picks.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it. I have Buffalo in the 5th seed, the Chargers in the 6th seed, and Baltimore in the 7th seed.
Okay.
Because as you know, I made my bold pick of picking the Patriots to win the division, which slots the Buffalo Bills in at number 5.
Much like Jenny, Buffalo in the 5 seed. I have Indianapolis in the 6 seed. Beef, 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 beef. And then the Ravens in the 7th seed.
I have the Patriots, the Chargers, and the Ravens as my wild card teams, and save your beef chance for a little bit for mine. Let's go AFC division winners here. Jenny, yeah, unveil them in whatever order you want to unveil them.
I'll do 4-1. So Tennessee as the 4 seed, Cleveland as the 3 seed, New England as the 2 seed, and
Whoa.
The Chiefs as the top seed.
Wow, totally streamlining this, Jenny. I just have Tennessee as the 4, New England is the 3, Cleveland is the 2, and Kansas City is the 1.
Connor, so. We are always on the same page.
Mm-hmm. I've got no Tennessee in the playoffs here. I feel really lonely out here on this non-Tennessee limb. My division winners, I have Buffalo in the 4 seed, Pittsburgh in the 3 seed, Indianapolis in the 2 seed, and the Chiefs in the 1 seed.
I could not dislike any of your thoughts on the NFL more than I do now. Like it's really fascinating. Like as we've been doing this podcast together, like sometimes I'll walk upstairs and be like, I disagree with Gary. But like when you start to do it every week, you're like, wow, like the two of us see the world in completely different, like the NFL world in like completely different ways. Like you live in a place where the Steelers are going to be good this year, and it's just, it's hard for me to digest that, you know?
But isn't that the magic of what Gary Gramling brings to the staff?
That like, is
he's
the magic.
Always the maverick, always. Which I like.
It is. I don't, the Steelers are always in the playoffs, so I feel like it's not that bold. Guys.
Maverick.
Oh, all right. Let's do, you know, let's do AFC title game matchups.
All right. That'll,
because then I can say Indianapolis again.
Okay. In the title game, I have the Chiefs beating the Patriots.
I have the Browns beating the Chiefs.
And I have the Chiefs beating the Colts.
Oh.
All right. No, sorry. I did pick the Steelers. I have the Chiefs beating the Steelers. I don't even know my own picks now. That's how mavericky I am. I thought I had the Colts AFC title game. I don't.
It's okay.
As I read my picks again.
Listen, Connor thought Bernard had a beard. So, I mean.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
It's all going out the window now. Let's go on to the NFC. NFC wildcard teams. Jenny Brentis.
Okay, wild cards 5, 6, 7. I have Seattle, San Francisco, New Orleans.
All right.
I have 7, Minnesota, 6, Seattle, 5, San Francisco.
Okay. I have New Orleans, too. I didn't think anyone else would have New Orleans. I have San Francisco in the 5 seed, New Orleans, 6, and Minnesota, 7. That was, that was pretty steady throughout there.
Yeah.
NFC division champions, Jenny.
Okay. Now I'll do 4 through 1, even though I did 5 through 7. You know, nonsensical. I have the Giants as the 4 seed, the Bucks as the 3 seed, the Rams as the 2 seed, and the Packers as the 1.
Wow. Giants is the 4, Buccaneers is the 3, Packers is the 2, Rams is the 1.
Wow, Connor. Almost identical.
Fantastic.
Giants 4, Rams 3, Bucks 2, and Packers 1.
Okay, wow. We're all on the same page.
Yeah.
I have to say, I didn't feel like there was a ton of drama with the NFC picks. I mean, I was a little unsure about the NFC East because you know that it's going to be teams that are like 9-8 and 8-9 and all of those, you know, similar records, but wasn't a lot of drama otherwise, I didn't think.
I thought a couple months ago I was going to like pick the Bucks to miss the playoffs or something. And now I just think they're going to go 20-0. Like I think they're just going to be invincible again. I think the only thing that can go wrong is like they have a bunch of 30 something guys who just played a 20 game season and now have to play a 17 game season, but man, the Bucks are going to be good. Let's go NFC title game.
I have the Rams beating the Packers in Green Bay.
I have the Packers beating the Rams.
I have the Rams at home beating the 49ers.
Ooh.
The 49ers, 2 road wins over the Giants and in Green Bay to get to the title game.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
I like it. You know, it's cool.
Let's save Super Bowl champion for the end. But, awards real quick. We can rapid fire, I think, most of these, but I think maybe we have to have a discussion about the offensive rookie of the year, perhaps. But let's start it with comeback player of the year. No one gets that worked about comeback player of the year, right?
Yeah, it's a difficult one to vote on. I went with Christian McCaffrey. I think I got a little spooked by Dak's shoulder and was just unsure if he's fully healed on all injuries, and so I went with McCaffrey.
I did Matt Stafford because he gets the rare, like, just Ooh. Comes back from kind of sucking and just being unhappy in general, and so that's, you know, sometimes, like, I those are my favorite comeback player of the year things. It's like he just came back from being bad.
He came back emotionally.
Yeah.
I just picked Dak. That one wasn't that much fun. Offensive player of the year. I hate picking offensive player of the year because it's just a kind of, it needs a different title. We need to redefine this award. It doesn't make sense because the MVP is always going to be a quarterback. So that also has to be the offensive player of the year. But offensive player of the year. Go ahead, Jenny.
I went with Alvin Kamara.
I did Derrick Henry.
I went with Travis Kelce because I think it's about time one of these tight ends gets some respect here.
It's a good pick, Gary. I actually considered that.
Let's go Coach of the Year. Oh, you guys picked the same one, right?
We did. Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick,
who hasn't won Coach of the Year since 2010. He won three times between 2000 and 2010, but hasn't won since 2010. And
it's
generally
time.
Coach of the Year, yeah, generally Coach of the Year is like a newly hired coach who turns a team around or something like that. But I think this year, if they win the division or if they have success with Mac Jones, basically transitioning the team after Tom, if they have a good year this year, I think he would be a leading contender.
I like that.
Second, everything Jenny just said.
I like the thought of him stealing the Colts beef chant, too, at some point in the season.
By then, it'll be so ubiquitous. I mean, everybody will be just yelling beef all the time. You know?
He'll be doing it after a victory as he heads out to midfield, just chanting beef to himself.
Yeah.
But what about the story you did, Connor, about the members of the Omaha Beef?
Ah, yes. Yeah. So they will especially probably be very excited about this season. The Omaha Beef is the sub arena football, like the three divisions below arena football team in Omaha, where Matt LaFleur, current Packers head coach, used to be the quarterback of the Omaha Beef, used to tear it up. And I went to go visit the Beef, and at halftime of Beef games, there are very large men that put on small bikinis. And they dance to, like, not suggestive music, but, like, pop hits of the day, you know? And so so it's a good time. It's a good time out there.
So what happens if the Packers play the Colts of the Super Bowl? Like, let's say the Colts have the kind of season that Gary Gramling is thinking that they're going to have, although Gary didn't pick them for the Super Bowl, but let's project out a little bit. Matt LaFleur's Packers play the Colts in the Super Bowl, and there's a lot of beef chanting. I mean, there are lots of ways in which Matt LaFleur could get creative with this. Maybe call on some of his contacts with the Omaha Beef. Maybe repurpose some of his old apparel. Maybe copy the Omaha Beef chants. I mean, there's just a lot of ways to get in the head of Colts fans who are chanting beef.
There is, yeah. I mean, this world that we've created for ourselves is spectacular. I don't love the Browns not being in this fictional Super Bowl, but
Sorry.
I will say that, the possibilities for beef are endless, and I'm setting myself up for a nice sort of fall from grace. If the Browns aren't good, then at least we still have the beef.
You know what, guys? I picked Brandon Staley as my coach of the year.
After I just, made fun of or poked fun, not poked fun, it's a good pick, you know, of new coaches who do something good with their teams. I mean, I think it's a good pick because it often goes that way.
I feel like the show completely got away from me. Maybe it was around the time when I got my own pick wrong. But, yeah. Defensive Rookie of the Year. Jenny, go ahead.
I went with Patrick Surtain. I knew Connor would, of course. We're on
Patrick
the same page.
Patrick Surtain.
Oh, wow.
Cornerback of the number one Denver Broncos defense this year.
Top-rated
Denver Broncos defense.
I like
it. Yeah. I picked Gregory Rousseau. I don't know. I'm getting lonely out here.
It's almost as if the two of us had a podcast before and then blended it with the one. Yeah.
Somewhere Andy Benoit is nodding along with my picks.
That's right.
Offensive Rookie of the Year. This is, okay, I think we all have different ones for this one, so this will be discussion worthy. Jenny, go ahead.
All right. To back up my Patriots win the AFC Championship pick, I have picked Mac Jones as my Rookie of the Year for reasons stated earlier in the show.
I'm going with Trey Lance. I think that while he's not going to start the season, I think there will be a Trey Lance package that's ready to go, and it'll slowly start to accumulate more and more and more, so he'll be able to keep up with the scoring early in the season and then eventually take over, you know, around the trade deadline or whenever they decide to move Jimmy Garoppolo.
I went with Trevor Lawrence because he's better at football than all of the other rookies in the league right now, and he's capable of overcoming whatever is going down in Jacksonville right now, which seems, look, it's season has started, but it's weird times with the Jaguars.
I wouldn't describe what's going on down there as good or positive, but it is the job of a quarterback to lift a team out of those situations.
I just
a lot
think
of pressure.
Yeah, I just think he's on a team that it's better than the Andrew Luck Colts around him, and he should be able to. I almost picked them for the playoffs, and then I didn't, but that's just the coward in me. Defensive player of the year.
I went with Myles Garrett to support Connor's Browns to the Super Bowl pick.
Okay.
Woo, woo, woo. I also went with Myles Garrett.
Wow, this is uncanny. We did
this
not compare notes before the
we
game
did not,
show,
no.
By the way.
No.
I went with Joey Bosa because he's playing for the coach of the year now. And I don't understand why the Chargers defense was not better the last couple of years with that level of talent.
That's a good pick.
Yeah. And finally, we have arrived at most valuable player for the 2021 NFL season. Jenny, go.
I went with Patrick Mahomes.
I did Super Bowl champion Aaron Rodgers.
Wait. I thought you picked the Browns were winning. No,
the Browns are going to the Super Bowl
to lose
to the Packers.
Oh,
wait a minute.
Yeah, that is what it's been the whole time. That is what this has been the whole time. The whole
really?
Time.
Really? We're going to have to ask Shelby to check the tapes.
This is like... This is an M. Night Shyamalan movie right here.
No, you know what it is? It's not an M. Night Shyamalan because those are good twists. It's like Ocean's 13 where it's like it was a twist that they didn't explain in the show and then just like jammed it in at the end. It's a bad twist. But
it's like the screenplay I wrote and sent to M. Night Shyamalan, but he didn't want to make it.
Yeah, no, I thought I made that pretty clear, but there may have been some times that I screamed the Browns will win the Super Bowl. There could have been some times where I did that. Shelby's probably going to find a bunch of these and
we're going to have to conference with Shelby.
I think they're going to make the Browns are going to make the Super Bowl and lose to the Packers.
Yeah, in fairness, earlier in the show, you did say the Browns would make the Super Bowl, and I didn't say anything at the time, and I was like, oh, no, he misspoke, because all along he's been saying they would win the Super Bowl. So you've been consistent in this show, but maybe we were only half listening when you spoke, Connor. Sorry.
My head is spinning, and I thought
Hold on.
A second.
I can get the Norwegian podcast up. I said this 2 weeks ago, so I will...
We'll check for the receipts. We can detail this on our next show, Connor.
To be clear, I listened to a couple of Danish NFL podcasts, but I'm not going to listen to Norwegian NFL podcasts. So how would I have heard it?
That's true. Well, you just have to, you have to broaden your horizons a little bit, Gary.
Yeah. For a second, I thought you were predicting that Aaron Rodgers would be traded to the Browns mid-season. And then they win the Super Bowl, which we would have had to do another hour on this show to unpack all of that. But boy, my head is spinning right now. I picked Patrick Mahomes, by the way, so me and Jenny are pals, finally.
Yeah.
Well, I guess this is it. We've arrived at the Super Bowl 56 predictions. Jenny, you can go first.
Well, we already know Connor's at this point. We've recently learned in the last minute. I picked the Rams 34 against Kansas City 27 with the Super Bowl MVP as Matthew Stafford.
/ Andy Benoit.
That's right. Well, yes, that was like the hidden subtext.
I have Packers 36, Browns 24.
Whew. I have Chiefs 28, Rams 27, and I picked Travis Kelce as my Super Bowl MVP. Do you have a
Big
Super
year.
Bowl MVP, Connor?
I do. Let me see here.
It would be. That's a lot of hardware for Travis Kelce.
Aaron Rodgers. Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers.
For which team?
Well, I have to say, Gary, we have another twist at the end of the show, and that you and I are now aligned.
Yeah.
We have different winners, but we have the same teams in the Super Bowl, so.
And you know what? It timed out perfectly because the pivot came right when Connor's entire created universe just sort of crumbled.
That's right. That's right.
Oh my, I gotta think on this one for a little bit.
Gonna be thinking about it all weekend. How things that I once thought were true are no longer.
That is the that's the good thing about having a totally distant narcissist on your podcast with you guys. You know, I have the ability to make it all about me and then change it up, you know? And that's what's that's a true gift.
Oh boy. All right. Well, they are playing football on Thursday night. We are going to be back with a very special Friday morning show talking about the this Bucks-Cowboys matchup and how it played out. And I don't know, maybe Jenny and I will be a little more at peace with this Connor news that the Browns are losing the Super Bowl.
I'm gonna meditate on it after eating a dinner of beef.
Beef, 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 beef.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys, and have a great season. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Rentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer is Scott Brody. Thanks, as always, to senior podcast producer Dan Bloom, who, look, he listens to the show every week, and we're going to find out what he thinks about this Connor. I don't want to call him shenanigans, but I do want to call him shenanigans. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.